program. That issue prompted passionate debate, but commentator and constitutional law professor Douglas Kamek says it's important for both sides not to overstate their positions.
When I testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee about the terrorist surveillance program, I was asked whether the president was above the law. Senator Feingold even wanted to know if the president could assassinate an American citizen in the interests of national security. Such overly general questions don't really help matters. My answer, of course, was simply no. I left it to the packed hearing room to figure out how the answer might change if that citizen was an Al-Qaeda confederate about to explode a dirty bomb on the subway. The president and Congress alike should not use exaggerated hypotheticals to press the limits of their powers. Doing so can have bad consequences. The president discovered this with his since-discarded torture memo, which some claim contributed to prisoner abuse. It's equally important for Congress not to dwell on exotic issues like assassination, lest real opportunities to limit al-Qaeda be lost. There's a tentative deal allowing Senate oversight of the terrorist surveillance program. It will work only if both branches avoid claims of inflated authority. In the tug-of-war on terror over the scope of presidential power, Congress is especially fond of quoting Supreme Court Justice Jackson's opinion in the 1952 Youngstown case. He told Harry Truman he could not settle a labor dispute by seizing steel mills, even if it would help with the Korean conflict. Justice Jackson explained his reasoning by putting presidential power into three boxes. When the president acts in agreement with Congress, he is at the zenith of his authority. When Congress has said nothing about an issue, the president was said to be, with apologies to Rod Serling, in a zone of twilight. And when the president acts contrary to Congress on his own authority, he is at his lowest ebb. Today's Congress should remember what Justice Felix Frankfurter said as well. He concurred in Youngstown, but disagreed with Jackson's broader theorizing. He wrote that war power issues should be met without attempting to define the president's power comprehensively. It's unprofitable, he said, to conjure up hypothetical future cases, and it ought to be a common understanding that clashes between the different branches of government should be avoided if a legal ground of less explosive potentialities is properly available. As Frankfurter suspected, Jackson's three boxes don't resolve tough cases. President Bush, in his role as commander-in-chief and with Congress's post-9/11 force resolution, ranks himself in the top most powerful box. Bush's opponents, by contrast, consign him to the bottom drawer. Frankfurter was right. Such intramural sparring over the outer reaches of power only serves to divide. In brokering a deal, both Congress and the president have recognized the need for enhanced enemy surveillance. If there ever was a time when external threat requires mutual resolve, it is now.
Commentary from Douglas Kamek, professor of constitutional law at Pepperdine University.